You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
Hello and welcome to a Times Higher Education podcast. This one is looking at our 2018 student experience survey. I'm Sarah Custer, and joining me is our data editor, Simon Baker, and our student editor, Sita Bardwa. Hi.
Hello. Hi, how are you doing?
Hi.
Thanks for joining me today, guys.
Sure.
So this year, we have some pretty interesting data, which shows three-year average scores over about a decade. Isn't that right, Simon?
Yeah. So we've actually got kind of data going back all the way to 2009. But instead of just looking at sort of every year's sort of scores in the survey, we've got that kind of three-year averages, which are much more stable because, you know, they take the average sort of over three different editions of the survey. So they kind of iron out the fluctuations that you might have year to year. And then we've been able to compare those three-year averages from 2009 to 11 to 2016 to this year. And it's quite fascinating in terms of some of the trends that you see in the in sort of students' perceptions of universities over that time.
We'll get to the results of this year's survey in a minute, but Simon, I'd like to dig a bit deeper with you into that, the trends that you found. You did an analysis of this three-year average data. What were some of the trends that you did see? Who were some of the institutions that you saw improving over time?
So there were kind of two different things to pick out here. Those, obviously, the universities that seem to have improved over that time, and those where, you know, there's the scores have kind of been flagging over that period. And I suppose the one thing sort of context to put into this sort of discussion is that obviously fees went up in 2012. So we are looking at the kind of trend over a period where tuition fees went up. So it's important to bear that in mind when you sort of think about some of these results.
What impact do you think the fees would have on these results?
Well, I mean, certainly something that's happened over the last 10 years, sort of anecdotally, when you talk to people and some of the stories we've written, is that something that was predicted as well is that students' whole relationship with university has completely altered in terms of, you know, they know that they've got this being charged for this this education, and they know they're going to bring out this debt at the end. Then it's completely changed how they think about university, and students are seen much more as consumers now. Their relationship with lecturers, they're questioning sort of the facilities they get, and I think that kind of, you can see some of that playing into what we're looking at here, actually. So, I mean, if you looked, I mean, firstly, I looked at kind of literally the universities that have fallen and risen the most on those kind of three-year average scores over that time. And you have to sort of bear in mind that those at the bottom had sort of further to travel statistically. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that does have a bit of an effect. But the kind of universities that sort of do very well are some of those in London that were doing very poorly, and one of the standout ones, the University of East London, that's moved up the most of any university in the sector. In terms of sort of its place in the survey, it's maybe gone from the right at the bottom in 2009 to 11 to sort of climbing about 10 or 15 places. So it's still down towards the bottom, as a lot of London institutions tend to be when you come to these satisfaction surveys. But it's quite an interesting improvement. And when you look at some of the reasons why those universities actually went up, then the sort of quality of facilities comes out as being a really important factor. So those universities that have used maybe some of their fee income or invested in their facilities have definitely seen a kind of increase in their satisfaction scores in those areas. I mean, for instance, East London, there's a huge sort of sports facility called Sports Dock that's been built there. And their sort of score, there is actually a particular question about sports facilities in the U-Site survey. And their kind of score on that just rocketed, really, as you might expect, I suppose. But generally,
for sports facilities,
yeah. But generally, their facility scores really helped sort of push them up. But it's not the only thing. If you look at kind of these universities that I'm talking about in general, those that have gone up, they did see improvements in academic areas as well. One example of that was Coventry, where the academic improvement was more important actually than some other areas. And you know, Coventry is a university that has done very well in the TEF, It's one of the modern universities. It's one that's often singled out as being very successful in terms of student satisfaction and minimising sort of dropout rates and all those kind of things that feed into the TEF as well, and NSS scores. So it's interesting how a lot of this survey data does correlate with what we've seen in the NSS, for instance.
So in our three-year data, we've seen that London universities, even though they continue to kind of appear on the bottom part of our rankings, they have made some improvement over the decades.
Yeah.
Some of them have.
I wouldn't say it was every sort of single one, but there's definitely some London institutions are among those that have done well. Westminster is another one that's moved up over that time. So it is kind of, there's definitely a sort of trend there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, looking at the other end, those universities that have slipped back, it's quite a mixed kind of bag. I mean, you can't sort of say, oh, they're all, you know, post-92s or research universities. They're a mixture, really. You've got kind of Cambridge in there, for instance.
Who was the sixth biggest faller?
Yeah, exactly.
Which is quite surprising.
Again, this is all relative. You can't really say that. Overall in the survey, Cambridge is much more highly rated than University of East London, for instance. Cambridge is still kind of
top 20.
But it was in the top five. It was like kind of right up there sort of 10 years ago, roughly. And if you dig into the scores, some of the areas that are kind of impacting these universities that have fallen back are sort of two things, really, I'd say. One is the kind of sort of social aspect of university, social life, societal experience. Another one is kind of student welfare and whether the students feel like they're being supported in their learning in a kind of from a welfare, perhaps sort of mental health sort of aspect, that kind of thing. And this is something that we've done a news story on this week as well, because Cambridge was actually, if you look at its welfare, the welfare category of the survey, it's kind of fallen more than any university across the sector. And speaking to the sort of Cambridge Union president there, then, you know, something that's a real concern at Cambridge is workload. Basically, although the university, I mean, she was telling me that the university there kind of really is aware of that and is trying to find ways to address it, it's not always been followed through because of its kind of decentralized structure, and it has colleges and departments at that kind of level as well. It's not always being backed up there. And again, fees comes into this, because one thing she was telling me is that, you know, students, when they're constantly aware of this sort of fee debt that they're carrying, then they almost put more pressure on themselves to work academically much more of the time and harder, and leave less time maybe for social activities and extracurricular activities, which actually are very important because they help students to switch off from the academic side of it. So, you know, you could definitely sort of speculate, you know, we don't have the evidence in the survey to necessarily suggest the reasons for it, but it's very interesting. And you wonder about the kind of changed nature of student life and how much kind of fees has played into that.
So you mentioned the reasons why we've seen some universities improve over the 10 years that we've been doing this survey was down to facilities and academics. What were some of the other ones that, like you mentioned with Cambridge, it's about student well-being and the societal experiences. What were some of the other things that were, I guess, the Achilles heel for some institutions?
The ones that were sort of falling back, I mean, good social life, I sort of mentioned that before,
right,
was one that if you take all the bottom sort of five universities that have fallen and you kind of, or six actually, and you add up all their kind of falls in scores across the kind of, especially the questions that are highest weighted in the survey, that are sort of seen as the most important for student experience, then you sort of do see that social life sort of comes up as one that's hit all of those universities. I mean, in particular, University of Central Lancashire sort of got hit by that one. Another one is a sort of good environment on campus. And again, we don't know the reasons for this, but you sort of do have to wonder whether, you know, if students are going to university much more aware that getting a good degree is vital for them to make this debt pay off and get a job at the end of it, then, and investing the time in all the other things that go on at university. And it might not necessarily be that these universities are kind of poor at fostering that experience, but students at some of those places obviously feel like that they don't have time for it, or maybe it is because it's not being sort of promoted in the same way.
This was definitely 2017 was definitely the year of measuring higher education, more so than any year previous, I think, in UK higher education sector. So one of the biggest ones with the Teaching Excellence Framework, and this is probably the data that we have that is most similar to the TEF.
Yeah.
How would you say this compares, and can you make any, you mentioned there was a correlation there.
Yeah, there is, because the first edition of the TEF that came out last year, half of it is for the metrics anyway, because what they do is they look at some data first and school universities on that data, and then they also have a kind of written submission which can alter your overall award. But half of the metrics at the TEF are the National Student Survey, and they're the kind of questions that are very similar to this. And if you look at the NSS scores for some universities and this, that there is kind of a there is a similarity there. It shows that this sort of survey does kind of reflect what's going on. I mean, one thing I would say about this survey compared with what's in the TEF is that this is much more up to date. This is giving us a kind of very recent picture of what students are thinking. The TEF, the NSS scores that you use in the TEF are a little bit, there's a little bit of a time lag there. So you could sort of speculate that some of these universities that have improved quite a lot in the last couple of years in our survey might be ones that start to see an improvement in their scores on the TEF, especially if the NSS is still counted on for a lot of the metric sort of findings. So I wouldn't be surprised that universities like East London, London Met, that did really badly in the TEF, to be honest, partly because of the London effect on the NSS. London universities tend to do badly in it, but partly because they were some of the lower scoring ones in that survey. Maybe they will start to see an improvement. Will it be enough to push them from a sort of bronze award up to the next level in the TEF? We'll have to see, because there's other things and that the TEF relies on, and it's being redesigned all the time,
right,
as well. You know,
yeah.
That you can't, one year to the next is going to be it's going to be a different kind of kettle of fish, really.
And it's worth noting that the top 20 of our rankers in the 3-year average data, the top 20 schools, almost all of them but two were rated gold in the TEF.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
yep.
Which kind of really shows that there is a real similarity between the NSS scores that kind of form quite a big part of the TEF and what we're seeing here. So student satisfaction generally in sort of surveys does have a big influence on the TEF as it stands. That might not be the case in the future. That's one thing that kind of a lot of people complain about with the TEF, is that student satisfaction really isn't a kind of good proxy for teaching quality. So it might become less important in the future. But it shows that the survey really is a good kind of yardstick of where different universities are on student satisfaction.
Well, mental health was something that we definitely focused on in this year's supplement for the Student Experience Survey. And Sita, you wrote that article for us, speaking to the universities that ranked well in our student well-being composite score, and speaking to some of them that are doing some on-campus prevention measures and treatment for students. Can you tell us a little bit about what you found out?
So I spoke to some of the universities that were in the top 10 for the student welfare composite, and what became quite apparent was that they were really trying lots of different methods for targeting student mental health and to really kind of build on the well-being of their student body. So for example, the University of Sheffield have brought some of their cognitive behavioural therapy sessions in-house, so students don't have to wait weeks and weeks to get the treatment on the NHS. Instead, they're being treated within the university, which is really great. And because that's been so successful, the university is then looking to try and find ways to bring other treatments in-house as well. And they also have a GP practice on site, which students can get really quick access to. And they provide sort of lots of different types of techniques and treatments and services that can help students to kind of improve on their well-being. Other things that universities were doing was targeting students proactively, which is so important because obviously early intervention is such a huge factor in preventing mental health crises stopping students from getting to a point where they kind of hit rock bottom. So targeting students proactively, reaching out to students of a particular demographic. So, for example, students that come from lower income families or students that have, you know, taken a BTEC rather than A-levels. They're targeted by the student wellbeing teams and asked whether they want extra support in certain things, so financial advice and things like that. And that's being done at the University of Chichester. And so those are kind of some of the things that can be done across universities. But I think it's also important to remember that universities can take a very individual approach. They should mould their services to fit their student body rather than trying to place this one-size-fits-all approach onto every single student.
Didn't you also speak to a student at Chichester about his experiences with the mental health services at the university?
Yes, so I spoke to Jamie Faulkner, who's a music student at the University of Chichester, and we spoke about how the university built an individual mental health plan for him based on his needs and the way that he was experiencing his mental health issues.
We also got some interesting student testimonials from around the UK. Sita, what did some of the students have to say?
So something that was quite positive was that all of the students, in fact, had really positive things to say about their time of being at university. So many of them spoke about the societies that they'd been involved in. For example, Eve Alcock from the University of Bath had joined 6 student societies while she'd been there, which is very impressive. She's also written for the uni newspaper, organised charity events, so really got involved with the entire experience of being at university. Other students spoke about how they had been supported with their learning. So Musa from Loughborough University said that he'd been really well supported since he discovered that he had dyslexia in his second year, which is really positive and encouraging to hear. And I think it's sort of the overarching message from all of the student testimonials was that even though university is quite daunting and they have faced some kind of issues, that generally their university has been very good in supporting them with those things and providing them with lots of opportunities to do lots of different things, so different events and societies and things like that. So that's really good to hear, I think.
So again, the social experience that we saw in the 3-year average data is really important to students.
Yeah, definitely. I think it looks like that's a really important thing, just as much as the academic side of it, which obviously once they leave university, that's something that employers are really going to be looking at, is how they use their time at university aside from the studying.
I mean, one really interesting point that was made to me of just doing the story on the sort of falling universities was that much more kind of this sort of support for students needs to be integrated into their kind of their curriculum, really.
Yeah, definitely.
Rather than it just sort of coming from the university sort of administration saying, right, there are these support services, these are the things you can do. It's almost like the academics themselves need to be sort of building that into what they teach and reminding students that it's kind of these kind of services are there, and it's important to kind of not always be fixated on the academic side of university
that's
life.
That's really true. That's definitely something that I've heard from students themselves, is that they like to hear more from the academics about how they can support their own well-being.
And it's what they'd be used to if they were sort of at school, really, I would have thought.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
you know,
so
that
true.
Your teachers at school are going to be kind of helping you on that side of things as well. So maybe that's a bit of a shock for some people when they go to university. I don't know.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and those are the people they definitely have the most contact hours with as well.
Yes.
Are your professors and
exactly.
the academics.
Yeah.
So
they're probably the first port of call, really, when anything does go wrong, is your tutor or your lecturer.
Yeah. you also spoke with a student who is studying at a London-based institution, which is our highest-ranked London institutions in this year's survey. And it must have been quite interesting to hear what her experience was studying at a London school, when historically the universities that do well in our survey tend to be kind of less urban, more countryside institutions. So what did she have to say?
Yeah, so I spoke to Kerry Tick, who's a bioveterinary science student at the Royal Veterinary College, and spoke to her about what she enjoyed the most about studying in London and at the university itself.
I think the thing I enjoy most is the kind of atmosphere we have here. So because we're all studying similar things, it's kind of like a family-orientated thing. So everyone is out for each other, everyone looks out for each other, everyone can help other people. We make everyone feel like they're at home here, and I think that's my favourite thing. You feel safe here.
How is it studying in London as well?
It's really good. So I was quite nervous about moving to London because I'm from Cardiff, which is a lot smaller than London, and I was worried about sort of getting lost or just kind of feeling like a small fish in a big pond. But it's been an amazing experience. You really feel like you grow up. And you grew up here, you feel like a real adult, and you get plenty of help from the uni as well. If you sort of want to know where to go, different things to do, then people will help you here. Our student union are really good as well. So we have freshers events, which are based in London. So you kind of get to know the place without being thrown into it on your own.
Right. And universities in London don't actually tend to score very highly in the student experience survey, but the Royal Veterinary College does. Why do you think that might be?
I think the reason for that is, firstly, our student union. Because we're quite a small university, we're very engaged with our students. We really want to know how they're doing, and we want to make sure that they have the best time and get everything out of the university that they want. So we have amazing entertainment officers who plan different events. We also, like I said before, we're very kind of close-knit community here, and we have a lot of people that can kind of get to know you, and you can do sort of things together. I think that's why we're different in a way, because we're so small that we can be more connected.
And also, what about the accommodation and things like that? Because London universities often don't score very highly on accommodation either. Is this something that's quite good at the college?
Yeah, definitely. So the Royal Veterinary College has quite a few accommodation available. I personally, through all of my years, I've lived out in the Hawkshead campus, which is out in Hatfield. The accommodation is beautiful. It's only, I think, about 5 or 6 years old now. It's quite new. But I've been in the different accommodation we have as well in Camden, and everything's really lovely. Everything's really clean. And from what I've seen, I think it's absolutely fantastic.
And why were you initially drawn to applying to the RVC?
So when I applied, I didn't actually apply to RVC. I applied to different universities for veterinary, because at first I didn't think I wanted to live in London. I didn't think it was for me. But then because of mental health issues and different books, I wasn't very well in sixth form, I didn't end up getting the grades. And so I came here to clearing, which I was really lucky to get into. I will be honest, at first I didn't think I wanted to go here just because of, like I said, living in London I didn't think was for me. But once I got here and realized how lovely it was, and I was completely in love, and I've been in love with the college ever since.
And so what advice would you give to any students who are wishing to study in London?
I think the advice I would give would be, firstly, come to the Royal Veterinary College because we're amazing. secondly, I think don't be afraid, because, like I said, I was terrified about coming to London, and it really stressed me out. I was worried that I just wouldn't fit in here, that I would be completely anonymous, and that I would just kind of get lost. Don't be afraid of that. You know, there's so many things you can do. London is an amazing city to live in. There's so many opportunities, and it really shapes you as a person. And yeah, I think that's the main thing I think I would say to people, just to have the confidence in yourself to know that everything will be okay.
And you mentioned in your previous answer that you had had some mental health problems and that you hadn't been quite well. How did the university support you with that?
The university has been absolutely incredible. I can't thank them enough for everything they've done for me. When I was a fresher in the first week, I remember having a talk from the Advice Centre, which is a team of people who are kind of there for everything, really. Any kind of issues you have, whether it's to do with money or bullying or just not feeling like you're fitting in, then you can go and talk to them and they'll kind of have a talk with you and put you in the right direction of what to do. And I went to go and talk to them. And at the time, I had quite kind of severe issues. I wasn't very well, and I hadn't started a medication or anything at that point. And they really helped me through it. They wouldn't have let me be on my own. They scheduled talks with me, like meetings and phone calls every week to make sure that I was doing okay and that I was settling in. And they've been absolutely fantastic. Not only that, we have an incredible student union here. I've just been elected the Vice President for Welfare 2018 till 2019. The current Vice President we have, Harriet Smart, is the most amazing person I've ever met. She's been dedicated for the past 2 years to really helping everybody that is experiencing problems, not only with mental health, but any kind of issues you have coming to university. Everyone here is really dedicated to looking after you. Mental health is something that's quite prevalent within, especially the veterinary profession and veterinary students. So we really kind of look out for you here, and we really want to make sure that everyone is okay.
And finally, given that tuition fees are so high, do you think that going to university and getting a degree is worth it for the amount of money that you're paying?
Definitely, yeah. It is a lot of money, and yeah, as a student myself, I completely understand that. And it's difficult. It's difficult for a few years, but it's worth it. It's completely worth it. Not only getting a degree, but the experience you have here. You make so many new friends. You know, you meet the people you'll know for the rest of your life. And not only that, but you kind of get shaped as a person when you come to the university. You get to know who you are. You have the opportunity to go as far as you want to. I would recommend it to anybody. I've loved my 3 years here.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Kerry.
No worries.
And for joining us on this Times Higher Education podcast.
No worries. Thank you for having me.
So that was Kerry Chick, a student at the Royal Veterinary College in London. Right, should we hold the suspension no longer and go through the results of this year's survey? So we've got two at joint number 10. At joint number 10, it's the University of St. Andrews and the University of Chichester. Coming in at joint 7th, we've got the University of Surrey, Newcastle University, and the University of Exeter. At number 6, it's the University of Oxford. And starting out with the top 5, number 5, University of Sheffield. Number 4, the University of Bath. Number 3, the University of Leeds. Number 2, Harper Adams University, dropped down from the top spot last year, and regaining that position is Loughborough University at number 1 for the, I believe, 5th time since we've been doing this survey. So congratulations to Loughborough University. I was able to speak with the Vice Chancellor at Loughborough University, Bob Allison, earlier this week to talk about what are the keys to their repeated success in our student experience survey. And he also had a thing or two to say about this notion of the student as a consumer.
I think it's because everybody on the campus, and by that, of course, I mean all of my colleagues, all of our students, but also a much wider group, you know, our alumni, and people in the local community support us and want to do well. You know, all universities have challenges, but there's a can-do attitude here. And I'm really proud of the contribution that everybody makes to the place. And it is, you know, I do mean this genuinely. It's a result that everybody should share in. And I do hope that when this is announced on Thursday, everybody feels proud of the achievement, because they should do.
And is there one specific thing, because I'm looking at our composite scores as well, and you're also doing great for industry connections, social experience on campus, university facilities. Is there one thing about the student experience at Loughborough that you think has really kind of kept you at the top all these years?
Yeah, I mean, we have what the students call the Loughborough family, or sometimes they refer to it as the Loughborough bubble. We genuinely try and create on the campus the sort of place that they want to learn, the sort of place that they want to live, and the sort of place where they want to experience a whole range of other things that go up to make the student experience. The other thing, and this is something that is personally, I think, important to me and the whole university, we do not see students as customers or consumers. That language is used too frequently in higher education today. Our students come here, they commit a significant part of their lives, and actually they commit very significantly financially to us. And what they should expect in return is that they come here and they partner with us. Of course, there are some things which we're responsible for, academic standards, for example, but the sort of environment we try and create here, it would be fairer to say we co-create it with them, and they're very much part of that journey. And I would like to think that if you were speaking to our most recent graduates, they would say the thing that they were most proud of about being at Loughborough was they felt that their contribution mattered. It wasn't just what they took from the place, but it was the opportunities that we gave them to give to the place as well.
You've been in higher education leadership in the UK for a number of years. Have you seen a shift towards a more student-centered approach from the experience universities are providing their students?
That's a really interesting question. I don't know. So let me answer that question by saying this. I think all universities are thinking about it. Yes, they're bound to. I think some universities, dare I say, pay lip service to it more than have it as a reality of everyday life at their university.
You mentioned people saying that universities are treating students like customers. Do you think that's a problem in other parts of the sector?
Well, it would be wrong for me to comment on other universities, but I have heard other vice chancellors, and indeed, unfortunately, some politicians use that phrase. And let me tell you why I don't think it's right. To call a student a customer or a consumer commoditizes them around a consumer-producer relationship, which is not, in my view, what higher education is about. A consumer goes to purchase a product where there's marketing and advertising, which isn't necessarily entirely on the truth. And once they have purchased the product, they leave wherever it is, and that's it. You know, they go home with their product, and thank you very much and goodbye. I think nothing could be further from the truth about a quality higher education. And one of the things and one of the ways in which that plays out for Loughborough is, you know, I travel quite literally all over the world, and I meet graduates, some of which are in their 80s now, obviously in this country, but most recently, for example, in India, graduates in their 80s who are still proud of the fact that they went to Loughborough. And that is not about a student being a customer. That's about them feeling they're an integral part of a community that they've been proud to belong to, and they are still proud to say they belong to at that stage in their lives.
Final question for you. How are you planning on maintaining your success and kind of weathering the storm that higher education is finding itself in the UK right now?
That is the easiest question to answer you've asked all morning. Very simply, two things. Appoint outstanding staff and recruit outstanding students.
And that was Bob Allison, the VC at our top spot winner of this year's Student Experience Survey, Loughborough University. That's it for us today. You can find out more about the Student Experience Survey on timeshighereducation.com and get the full listing of this year's rankings, as well as the winners of our composite scores. If you have any comments or any suggestions to make for our podcast, please do get in touch at sarah.custer@timeshighereducation.com. Thanks for joining me, Simon and Sita.
No problem.
We'll see you next week.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.